Welcome back to another episode of Scalescape. I'm your host, Justin Chu, and today we have a very special guest whose fingerprints are all over the Hong Kong startup ecosystem. She's the head of Start Me Up HK, Jane Chan, and today we discuss why Hong Kong is a perfect landing point for startups and entrepreneurs to succeed, and its relation to the Greater Bay Area. Enjoy this one, and I'll see you soon. Hey, Jane, welcome to the Scalescape podcast. Very excited to finally have you on the podcast. CY from InvestHK has told me a lot about you, and I'm so excited to have you on the podcast today. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me and for inviting me along for this.
No, of course, it's my pleasure. To kick us off, Jane, could you give us a quick introduction about yourself and how you ended up finding your way into the Hong Kong startup ecosystem?
My name is Jane, heading up the Start Me Up HK team at Invest Hong Kong. Now, Invest Hong Kong is actually a government department helping overseas companies to establish here. 6 or 7 years ago in Hong Kong, there was actually very little happening with the startup ecosystem, but there were fragments of little groups of people doing different things. So Invest Hong Kong actually set up a new team, and I've been heading that team to actually support startups in a number of different ways. Prior to that, I've also been working within the technology and startup space for quite a long time. Mm. And the whole internet thing was just starting. So I was very lucky in that I started working in the multimedia and then the internet side, during that whole rise to the .com. And I remember at the time, even just telling people what the internet was and trying to teach my colleagues at advertising agencies about this new kind of communication medium. So during that whole kind of development of the .com kind of era, it really was very exciting. Mm. But unfortunately, I think, the infrastructure at the time wasn't conducive to be able to deliver the kind of things we envisaged, to see the kind of changes that we're seeing now and what's feasible and how completely ubiquitous, almost like basic rights. It's electricity, it's everything else. That's how normal it is now, but at the time it really was very different.
The first thing I do have to say, Jane, is when you were talking to me about having to explain to your colleagues what the internet is about and how you struggle with that, totally can relate when I speak to my grandmother about using FaceTime or the technology. So good. On a more serious note, though, Jane, I can totally resonate with what you're saying about how right now we're in a state of very exciting possibilities with, and how you said, you mentioned that the internet's ubiquitous, it's all around, and also that raises issues with data, privacy, security, and things like that. So there's so much to unpack. I think to anchor this discussion, I'd love to ask, why do you think Hong Kong is the perfect launch pad for startups?
I think for any kind of location to be successful in nurturing startups, you really have to provide some fundamentals. For me, those three fundamentals are access to markets, access to funding, and access to talent. And Hong Kong actually has all three factors. When we're talking about access to market, Hong Kong market in and of itself is 7.4 million people. We know that in the startup world, that's not enough. But Hong Kong is a fantastic test market with its 7.4 million people. Most people have more than one mobile device. I mean, it's one of the highest kind of device penetration in the world. We've got very good internet infrastructure here, which means that you've got the blazing speed as well. So it's actually, you can test a whole bunch of different kind of models as well as technologies here. And then once you start looking at other kind of markets, then Hong Kong has several kind of benefits, just purely by virtue of our location, our geographic location, actually. So we've got the GBA. It's a market just north of Hong Kong, the kind of nine cities residing within Guangdong province, plus Hong Kong and Macau. And that market itself is worth, 1.3 trillion in GDP. It's one of the highest, even compared to a lot of countries globally. And you've got a population of about 70 million. So when you're talking about GBA, you can't pull those big scale, those big numbers out of that factor, that discussion. So that market is incredibly accessible, and not just like a consumer market. It's also, having very advanced kind of manufacturing residing within each of those cities. So if you are a startup, startup and you know, you're looking for, you know, really rapid prototyping and manufacturing, you've got that facility sitting on our doorstep. And then if it's successful within a GBA, chances are you can then port it to the other kind of cities within mainland China. We are also residing in the middle of Asia. So that is important. You know, I think in Asia, people still prefer to do things face to face. So, you know, COVID notwithstanding, a lot of people used to be able to actually just fly from Hong Kong to another market really easily. So market access, hugely important. Funding. Hong Kong, one of the world's like IPO centers, and it's a massive fundraising kind of center. We've got a lot of investors sitting here. But I will caveat that by saying that most of our investors are much, you know, much more like skewed towards a later stage kind of investment. So you're, you know, if you were looking at the startup kind of terms, we've probably got more investors within the kind of post A and up right up to pre-IPO kind of investors rather than the really early stage. So it really suits those kind of scale-ups who are looking to potentially leave or expand from their original countries to attain new markets. And Hong Kong, you know, is a very good kind of fundraising center for that. Thirdly, the talent side of things. So Hong Kong has something like, you know, it's got 8 universities. I think 6 of them are research universities and something like 5 within the world's QS 100, top 100 rankings, which is, you know, it says something. The universities here produce really good quality talent. When you've got those kind of fundamentals in place, it really, really is good for nurturing those kind of startups and just, you know, starting to develop that ecosystem a little bit more. As your ecosystem matures, you've got to have all these other kind of components like the accelerators, the incubators, co-work spaces, the serial entrepreneurs, all of these kind of components as well in order to nurture this and take the ecosystem further. And I think, you know, we also have that as well. And that's why I fundamentally believe that Hong Kong is a great location for startups.
I couldn't agree more, Jane. I'm such a firm believer that we are not in shortage of talent. We're not short of capital either. And like you said, access to markets, one of the most important factors. We're not short of these. But what we need more is, you know, more bridging between these pieces that are so fragmented from each other. And I think there's so much to unpack with what you just said. The first question, though, that I do have is you touched a bit about access to markets and specifically with the Greater Bay Area. How do you see Hong Kong's role in the GBA area and evolve over the next coming years, specifically in the context of innovation and entrepreneurship? You know, considering that we're right next to Shenzhen, industrial technology hub, how do you see Hong Kong's role within the GBA?
I think we really need to look at our strengths, you know, Hong Kong compared to all these other kind of cities. And you mentioned Shenzhen, which is undoubtedly going to be one of those big tech hubs globally. Hong Kong is not the same as Shenzhen. It doesn't have, you know, these kind of manufacturing capabilities. But I think there's so many things that we have here in the city that can completely complement what's happening in Shenzhen. Mm-hmm. So if we assume that Shenzhen is like that tech hub, that manufacturing hub, and it already is designated as that kind of role by the central authorities, you know, we can basically augment and develop that collectively along with Shenzhen, because there's something that Hong Kong has that all these other cities in the mainland don't have. And that's like the freedom of movement in terms of capital as well as talent. We've got the rule of law, which is a common law system. You know, it's a system that a lot of other kind of countries around the world are much more familiar with, as opposed to a civil law that's been run in other kind of cities within the mainland. We've got the fact that we are one of the world's financial centers means that there is a lot of internationalization that happens here in Hong Kong just by virtue of those kind of roles. And when we add all of these kind of like know-how and you know, we support and work alongside these places like Shenzhen and Guangzhou, I really believe that we have so much to add. You know, we've got the business and professional services here. So, you know, I think we are a fantastic foil for those kind of other cities. And I think, so while Shenzhen is very much, you know, this massive tech hub that's going to happen, Hong Kong's role is the internationalization of that. Those companies within the GBA who are looking to go international will do so via Hong Kong. And you will notice a lot of the companies, the major tech companies who are looking to go international, already have quite substantial offerings here in the city. And there's a reason for that. I mean, it's not much different from our role has been for the past 50 years or so as a gateway to and from China. Mm. I mean, it really is still like that. But now we've got the tech and, you know, the innovation side.
100%. And I think you're right in looking at our strengths and then using that and to really leverage and to tap into our strengths uniquely. What you said about how, you know, Hong Kong allows for a very good playing field for internationalization, globalization, for international players to come into here with, you know, the complexities of regulations are a lot easier to access, say, compared to maybe the mainland market, mm-hmm. and a lot of strengths that really make Hong Kong stand out within the GBA. So that part's really about access to markets. The second thing that you did mention, right, access to talent with all the education and institution hubs here. And one facet to our discussion about community building would have to involve, you know, how education institutions are anchored within the overall ecosystem, right? Do you think that we're doing a good enough job in retaining talent? And are we breeding sort of this entrepreneurial drive in our students in identifying opportunities and building solutions?
I think it's improving an awful lot. You know, when you are a financial hub, actually, it's actually quite hard to try and compete for talent when you're a startup and, you know, you're competing against the investment banks, you're talking, you know, competing against the big fours and in recruiting talent and things. So, you know, you're always going to be competing to a certain extent. I think before, it was actually quite hard to try and get parents to accept the fact that their kids wanted to go into entrepreneurship. It wasn't actually something that was traditionally encouraged. But now we're starting to see a lot more students being interested in joining startups and entrepreneurship, and universities actually reflecting that. They are now trying to introduce components of entrepreneurship throughout all of the different types of courses. The tech transfer offices or the entrepreneurship centers within universities are doing a great job. I don't think people recognize how much they do actually in terms of trying to turn some of that, you know, very academic type of research into something that's much more usable. All of our intelligence and research is just going to reside in this, you know, in sort of like a silo at the university. And the commercialization guys really help to facilitate that, connect them with right people to actually see how they can turn that into something that's much more usable. I think going forward with more role models of like startup founders, you know, that are going to be successful, and then they themselves are going into sort of kind of serial entrepreneurship and mentoring and investing, I think we're going to see more and more of that happening within the universities as well.
Right, right. And that's a very optimistic outlook. You mentioned that, you know, with all the education institutions, you know, a very important part of that is the application, you know, of research and development into market ready products, right? And making, you know, these ideas and these research articles, you know, be able to produce something that can be applied to everyday life. So I think that's really important. And also with, you know, what you mentioned about the whole culture and the social cultural implications and comparisons between corporates and, you know, startups, you know, you're definitely right. I think that right now we're facing, you know, at least students, I guess, are more risk averse in terms of career pursuits and development. I think it's easier to want to settle for a job of security instead of, say, pursuing something that might have a little bit of risk attached to it, right? Which is so prevalent with startup opportunities. But I do think that it's quite optimistic. I do have a lot of friends who are also pursuing careers in different startups and leading business development, strategy, tech, and all kinds of things. So very exciting. With corporates, though, so another part of our discussion, with corporates and, in, you know, there's always a comparison, right? But never a talk about, you know, the synergies between the two as much, right? How can we synergize, you know, between corporates and startups together to make innovation happen?
You know, I think that kind of... you know, headline that actually pitches the corporates alongside the startups, I actually think it's not quite... the case, actually, I think this, you know, it makes for headlines when you say, like, you know, the corporates are not as nimble or agile as the startups, or the startups will never be able to get the same kind of like customers as these large corporates will have, all of these. But I actually think it's there's a lot of like complementary kind of things happening. And I think in reality, there's actually a lot of startups are basically collaborating with corporates in different kind of ways. So for example, one of the really common kind of points of view is that, you know, within the fintech space, you know, the financial institutions are going to lose completely to the startups, these neobanks and all these kind of things, because they can't adjust their strategy fast enough. They're not as tech savvy towards a new kind of audiences and things like that. But we've actually found just looking at the actual what's happening on the ground in the market is, you know, the large kind of banks and financial institutions are like engaging with so many startups and on so many different types of levels. You know, the simplest one, of course, is being the actual buyer of that kind of technology. You know, so they can actually, if you can't, you know, beat it, you basically bring it in-house, don't you? You try and sort of buy that kind of technology in. And actually, we're seeing, you know, financial institutions actually, you know, purchasing different types of tech and things that they think might potentially fundamentally add to their business in some kind of way, you know, whether we're talking about reaching out to new audiences or trying to reduce cost of operations, those kind of things. So that is usually the simplest kind of way of actually interacting with startups. Mm. The other ways that they are actually interacting is also by setting up their own innovation departments or, you know, launching different kind of accelerators. So, you know, for example, Infinity, the car people, for a while launched several cohorts along specific areas that they wanted to improve or resolve specific issues in. So they did quite a few of these kind of pilots, and I know that they actually took some of these kind of technology on board. So I actually think there's a lot more kind of collaboration that goes on, and especially in a market like Hong Kong, in the financial services industry, where a lot of the work is on the B2B side. You know, Hong Kong's financial services kind of market is very, very strong on the B2B side, whether we're talking about trade finance, cross-border and all these kind of things. And then and projects like that, I think, you know, startups can really help to enhance that. And it's incredibly hard for startups, actually, if they are trying to do it on their own. You know, when you're trying to sell on a B2B solution, it's a much longer selling period than it is directly selling to a consumer with a very quick, ready kind of solution, which means that they've got to have some kind of financial runway in order to make that through. And that's where, you know, collaboration with those big financial institutions really help. And of course, you know, the larger corporates are also investing in these kind of companies as well, you know, on the off chance that, you know, they may not need them now, but potentially it might be useful for them in the future, or just purely on financial returns, because we've seen how quickly, you know, tech startups can scale, that, you know, potentially if you are a tech investor, you can potentially get pretty lucrative returns in a very quick manner, you know, compared to a lot of other kind of like wealth management kind of products. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I actually think that the real situation versus the rhetoric is actually quite different as to, you know, collaboration between corporates and startups. That notwithstanding, I still think there's a lot more room for improvement.
I was just going to say.
There really is. I mean, I think, you know, a lot more companies should actually, you know, start looking at technology, innovation and innovation and also in business models and things like that, because things are changing and they need to adapt to that new kind of environment, especially the SMEs.
Right, 100%. No, and I can think of so many examples of, you know, very good collaborative efforts in, you know, between both corporates and startups, you know, with Standard Chartered and Mox, with Bowtie Life Insurance and Sun Life, you know, a lot of very good examples and very strong examples of how there's a lot of synergy between, you know, these two elements. And also, like you mentioned, right, with corporates forming up their own innovation departments to come up with tech, you know, it's entrepreneurship, but also intrapreneurship. And, you know, Henry Arslanian, who's in PwC, global crypto leader, you know, another great example. But that being said, you know, it's so easy to just set up, an innovation department, throw on a couple of shirts, you know, and just parade that around. But it does take real effort to really build on that relationship. And how do you leverage into each other's strengths? right? Mm-hmm. You know, with corporates, and you have an access to network, access to capital. You know, with startups, you have innovative ideas, and very, you know, so there's so much to unpack, and there's so much to bridge more together. And you're right, so much more to improve on as well. Aside from, you know, I do have just last two questions. Aside from fintech, right? What other verticals or fields does Hong Kong offer innovation opportunity around, and why?
Well, some of the areas that we've been seeing a lot of, you know, really good developments, and we think potentially has really strong legs to expand much further in Hong Kong, is the prop tech space, actually, the property tech. So, you know, we are seeing the developers as well as real estate companies now really, you know, taking on board some of the stuff that's happening in the marketplace. So we think that there's actually a lot of potential there, not least because like Hong Kong's property sector is just such a hot thing, you know. And I think the whole COVID situation actually really sort of like pushed that further, you know, really propelled that forwards, whether we were talking about, you know, basically trying to differentiate your property versus someone else's and trying to target a younger kind of audience, or you were trying to think like of technologies where you can actually do facilities management much more cost effectively. So, and also leveraging things like robots to do all your cleaning and things, especially important during, you know, the COVID times. Other areas, Hong Kong has always been, you know, a trading kind of hub. You know, that area, that whole e-commerce and associated kind of logistics kind of side, we think there's you know, there's also going to be lots of developments. I mean, already, you know, everyone by virtue of this lockdown has been buying a lot more online. I know I certainly have. I started using e-commerce for a whole bunch of different things that I never anticipated, just because it was just more convenient. So I think the whole e-commerce side is actually just going to get stronger, and correspondingly the logistics tech side is also going to get bigger, especially now that, you know, a lot of people are also selling to the mainland as well as trying to sell the products from the mainland to other kind of markets internationally. So another big growth area. Finally, the other one that I think is also going to be coming up is on a health tech and a biotech kind of side. There's going to be a whole number of kind of like university kind of collaborative projects going to be residing in the Science Park. That's already started, actually. That was it's a kind of an Inno Hong Kong kind of program, whereby international universities are collaborating with local universities in a number of different areas related to health tech and biotech. And I think there's going to be a lot of spin-off that's going to come out from there. So we, you know, we think that it's also going to be quite a growth area as well going forward.
Very exciting. Personally, right, I'm the most intrigued by you know, the health tech side of things. And you're totally right, you know, with the COVID pandemic and everything, it's definitely spawned and accelerated, you know, telemedicine, diagnostic services, you know, in that area. So very exciting, very exciting vertical to look at. I think the first one that you mentioned with prop tech, equally excited about, and you're right. There's so much, you know, the biggest thing about it is that there's so many pain points, you know, within the property industry. You know, when you're buying or selling new homes, renting, you know, there are a lot of pain points that can be overcome. But with prop tech, you know, with the different kinds of regulations surrounding, you know, real estate, very unique from place to place. So that is a challenge, you know, that I do see with prop tech development within Hong Kong, but also very optimistic about because of the pain points and the talent that we have to be able to overcome that. And with the second thing that you said, e-commerce, you know, we do really need to think about how, you know, e-commerce and offline stores can really come together and play, you know, within that playing field together, you know, and setting up omni-channels to really integrate these two platforms together to make the consumer experience, you know, doubly better, right? So there's so many verticals to be excited about, aside from fintech, right? We all know that part. We all know that.
So fintech's exciting to me too, but there's just so much more going on.
Yeah,
also.
Exactly. And I'm equally excited as well. One last question to end our podcast, Jane, is I like to introduce to my guests and explain to them what, you know, the title of the podcast is, Scalescape. Right. And so when we're breaking down the, you know, the title Scale and Scape, when we're scaling a product and we're bringing it to the masses, you know, transforming ideas into market ready products, you know, and then scaling it, you know, worldwide, we really need to take into account the landscape of things, right? The bigger picture on a macro level, you know, how do different factors like product market fit, you know, geography, demographic, you know, things like that, how do they come together? Right. And so when we're scaling something, we need to look at, you know, the landscape of it. What is one tip that you have for founders, entrepreneurs, and operators to scalescape their companies to success?
Oh my goodness. I think it's just really simple. Just make sure that your product addresses a problem. I think if it really does, if it really helps to address someone's real problem, not what you perceive it to be, but really the kind of issue that person is having, I think if you have that and your product is good and snappy and easy to use, you know, I think you have a very good chance of that, your business becoming successful. When you are, you know, starting up a company or whatever kind of stage your startup is, there's always going to be different kind of issues along the road. And I just think it's, you know, you've just got to constantly keep making sure that whatever product you're doing always just addresses that problem as it changes over time and addresses that well.
I couldn't agree more, Jane. And I thank you on behalf of the Hong Kong startup community. We really need people like you and the impact that you've done. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
If you liked that episode, check us out on all social platforms. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And stay tuned because we've got lots of content. I'll see you next week.